And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. Today we have a very special episode. Our guest today, or should I say host today, is actually Jeff Munn, who is an executive coach, helps startup founders, helps guys like myself. And you know what? I think we're going to get a little bit of a sneak preview of that, because today he's going to interview me about what it is like, what it's been like for the last 90 days or so since I bought out my business partner at Fullscale, and what that transition has been like, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to talk about it. And so very excited to, I don't know, actually it might be kind of scary to go through this, but it's going to be fun today, Jeff. I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, be nice. Am I allowed to cry? I didn't bring any beer. I should have brought some beer.
Do you have Kleenexes nearby?
I have paper towels. So this will be a fun conversation. So I'm really excited about it. And thank you for doing this today, Jeff. So I don't think I need to remind anybody that today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company, which we're going to talk about today. But so, Jeff, where do we start?
Yeah, well, let's first of all, thank you for, I think the origin of this was you did a more detailed podcast on the actual, you know, purchase of the company, what that process was like, how you guys came to an agreement. And that's a whole separate podcast episode. We're not going to drill into that in much detail. I want to focus more on what's happened since then. But to start out, could you, if you're a founder superhero, tell me your origin story, you know, that kind of thing. And go back all the way to Stackify. Because I think one of the things we don't realize or get is that entrepreneurs are a little bit different breed. You know, the idea of like, whatever it is, I can do this better, or I'm not a very good employee, or whatever happens to like drive you to that entrepreneurial moment. What was that for you? And then just kind of walk us forward from there.
So I've been an entrepreneur for over 20 years. And, you know, I guess I have the roots of it from growing up as a little kid. My dad and my grandfather both worked at flea markets or had a little retail store and whatever. So I always kind of worked around that part of the entrepreneurial part of it. And, you know, earlier in my career, I guess I was just always looking for side hustles, always the person who would just help other people, whatever their idea was, just always looking for problems, looking to help people. And naturally that got me into starting my own tech company because somebody else had an idea and I said, hey, maybe I can help you. And so the first couple things I did in my career were just that. But, you know, fast forward 20 years later, buying out my business partner at Fullscale is kind of a whole different thing. Cause this is not it's a tech company, but it's not a SaaS company. It's not a software company. It's really a professional services company. And, you know, Fullscale started 6 years ago as a partnership between me and my other original business partner, because I needed to hire software developers at Stackify. I needed to hire about 10 people. And I was like, I can't afford to hire 10 software developers in Kansas City. What are we going to do? So I thought about hiring people in Latin America and had some, you know, good experience with that. But my business partner, the other Matt, said, hey, you know what? I've had developers in the Philippines for a long time. We should just set up a little office there. He already had a few employees. It's like, I could hire 10 employees. We'll just have like a little office or something. And just kind of started as an accidental business, honestly, that continued to grow. And within the first year at Fullscale, we hired like 100 people. But again, I was not involved. You know, I was running.
So you were still running Stackify at that point. And you were basically a Fullscale customer.
I was. So I was basically one of Fullscale's largest customers for the, you know, first 6 years of the company. But I was always really more on the customer side, where my business partner was the one running the business.
Uh-huh. So what then happened at Stackify? Like, what's that exit process like for you? And how does that transition between, okay, now I'm no longer at Stackify, and now I'm co-running this other business? Like, what's that transition like?
Yeah, so in 2021, I sold Stackify. And then after that, I was trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do next? And, you know,
why did you sell Stackify, Matt? What was the circumstances that you said, yeah, it's time to get out?
Honestly, it was a hard business. Competition was hard, and I was kind of, the company needed to raise like a significant amount of money or find like some good strategic partners or something to really grow and scale it. So I decided I'd rather just exit it and go do something else. And, you know, luckily found somebody that wanted to acquire the business, and we sold it and was ready to go do something else.
All right, cool. And here you are at Full Scale, like just happens to show up at the right time, right?
Well, I wanted to be involved with Full Scale, but my business partner was the CEO and he was running it. So I always kind of had to give him his space, let him do his thing. And I was always kind of the outsider, right? So originally I was always the customer, and then I was still kind of the outsider, you know, because he was running the business.
So that's how you came into the business. How did it happen that you came into the business? I mean, I know how the idea was germinated, but did you like buy in, or what happened at that?
It just started out more as a 50-50 partnership of like, hey, I could use this thing. I would be the customer of it. So, right. Like, so and Stackify would be the customer of it. Right? Yeah. So if Stackify can be the customer and sort of fund this venture, if we could find some other people that would be customers, then that's a win-win for everybody. Then we hired 100 other people, and the rest was kind of history.
And that was because you were bringing in enough customers to hire 100 people to serve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And early on, I knew enough people through my network and friends and colleagues, all that kind of stuff, that helped drive a lot of that, you know, initial growth. And, you know, it just has continued to grow since then.
Yeah. And so you get to this point, and this is in the other podcast, so I'm not going to go into it, but it just like, hey, what if we did this? What if I buy you out? What if I take over the business as CEO? You have your exit. So Matt exits. You are CEO as of December, am I?
Yeah, as of December 2023. Yeah, the other Matt. Yeah. So we were both Matt. Yeah, the other Matt. The other Matt.
Matt DeCourcy, yeah.
Yeah, he took the exit, and I decided to go all in. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go find the funds that we need to do the deal and buy him out. And so it was great thing for him. You know, he's happy to take the exit and go do whatever it is he wants to do now. And I was super excited to step in and run the company. And so here we are 90 days later.
Yeah. And so how's it feeling?
You know, it's good and it's bad, both. It's and not really bad, but I should say hard. It's good and hard, both. It's takes a lot of getting used to. It's a new role. It's like all of a sudden you're CEO of a company with 300 employees, but you're also taking over, you know, all these existing people and processes and things are going on. And, you know, every week it's kind of uncovering. It's like, why do we do this thing? I never heard of that before. Why do we do this thing? And honestly, that is even way worse because we're dealing with a company that's in another country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have about 300 employees in the Philippines and only 4 or 5 here in Kansas City. And so we're dealing with international law, international labor law, and there's all sorts of just weird random stuff that still sometimes comes up. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting.
And are you in touch with Matt to like, hey, why did we, or is he just like, has he exited fully?
You know, there hasn't really been much I've needed to ask him. And if there's some weird things like that, some of our other employees, you know, have some of the back history too of like well, why do we do this thing? Our chief operating officer is a guy named Daryl, who's super awesome. And he's been with the company also for like 5 years. So Daryl has a lot of those weird backstory things if some of those things come up, but
Yeah. And how much time was Matt spending in the Philippines?
You know, for the first like several years that he had employees there, he never went. Not until, you know, 5-6 years ago when this really started growing, he went over there. But he had employees before and never went over there.
Yeah.
But it was just like 5 or 10 employees or something. But he would go over there a couple times a year, probably. He'd go for the company like holiday kind of Christmas party that we would do. And then maybe one or two other times a year. And that's kind of the same schedule that I'm looking at, like 3 to 4 times a year. I actually go there in about 3 weeks from now.
Okay. And is this your first visit since taking over the CEO role? Or?
So the first visit officially would have been last December when we made the announcement. So
okay. So you did go there to, okay, good.
So yeah. We go to the company, you know, holiday party, kind of Christmas party, right? And get up on stage and tell 250 plus people that, hey, by the way, here's the thing. So it was definitely a little shock when that happened.
And, yeah. What was that like for you? Because, you know, in a lot of ways, from like the employees and the technical expertise and so forth, you know, this is Matt DeCourcy's company. These are Matt DeCourcy's employees.
Right.
He's got the relationship. And now there's this new guy who, yeah, maybe people are, they've heard your name, but they don't know you. Like, what's it like to step into that?
You know, so most of them knew me indirectly in some way. Like, I had helped in the past record some like training videos or company introduction videos that we would have like new employees would watch or whatever. And I was in some of those videos or whatever. And so I think people kind of knew who I was, but they didn't really know me. But it was definitely weird to, I was always kind of the outsider. And honestly, even this podcast, I was one of the hosts, but I was kind of the outsider. Like, it was still really the other Matt's podcast, and I was the outsider. And like, we had a local event here in Kansas City like a week ago where I had to give like a 3-minute speech. Like, it wasn't a big deal. But before, I wouldn't have gave that speech. He would have gave that speech. And if I would have gave this speech, I was kind of the secondary outsider person, right? So now all of a sudden it's like I can be myself and do whatever I want to do, however I want to do it, and not worry about what other people are thinking, I guess is my point, right? And so that is still a little bit different to be like, I can just do whatever I want to do now. I don't have to worry about what he thinks or what my business partner thinks or whatever, right? So it's taken a while to adjust to that.
Well, it's an interesting place to be in because on the one hand, you're right. You can say whatever you want because you're now the lead guy. You're the CEO. And on the other hand, there are 300 people who are used to how he did it. And everything that you say is different. They're like, well, that's different. Why is that? So what's it been like to navigate that? Because I would think there might be something you would say off the cuff that you didn't realize, like, wait a minute, that's totally different than we used to. Is this a change or is this just Matt talking casually or what is this?
Yeah.
Like, well, the weight of your words as CEO becomes a lot heavier.
Yeah. And that's always tough to navigate where, you know, we have a whole admin team over there, our executive team, right? So we have a CFO and basically head of software development and HR, all these different things. And so, it's trying to build rapport and like a personal relationship with those people so they don't overly jump at every single thing you say either, right? Like, how do you build a relationship with these people where they don't just feel like order takers to the new overlord boss that just showed up last week, right? Like, how do you build a relationship with these people? And, you know, tried really hard to do that, still trying to do that. That's part of the reason I'm going back over there, you know, shortly. And went there in December. It's like, how do you build a personal relationship? But it is hard. Some of it is just unpacking, like, why have we done things the way that we do them for the last 6 years? Yeah. And I think there were certain areas of the business where they actually craved leadership. So like, there was a vacuum of nobody providing very specific leadership in these areas where all of a sudden I come in and I'm like, okay, I have expertise in these things, or I have a lot of interest in improving these things, and I want to provide a lot of leadership in these areas, where before maybe there was a little bit of a vacuum, right? Yeah. And I think there are a couple managers or executives that are like actually really excited. They're like, hey, we have leadership that like wants to go do this thing. And maybe they wanted to do them before, but they didn't have like executive sponsorship to do them, right? They're like, right, we want to do these things, but the previous owner like didn't worry about it or didn't care about it. So in now we have like executive sponsorship and people that like want to go do this. So I think there's some areas where there's a lot of excitement, and there might be some areas maybe where people are like, we liked it before when we didn't have executive sponsorship and we just like, I don't know, like the status quo was good. And now somebody came in and they're like trying to make a bunch of changes and I don't like it. So there's probably both.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's part of the, you know, every CEO has particular areas where they choose to dive in a little bit more and to be a little more hands off. And like, how do you navigate that? How's that different from your predecessor? I mean, I don't know. I wish I had had the foresight to pull it up because it's a great book. I recommend it for anyone who's going through some kind of major career change. It's called The First 90 Days. And it's basically like, what is the plan for going through and getting all that information so that at the end of that 90 days, it's exactly where you are right now. So at the end of that 90 days, you can think about, okay, now what do I actually want to be different?
Well, and
go ahead.
And that is great. So if you walking into this, like last November and December, like knowing like, okay, we're going to do this transaction. That was my thought process. Like first 90 days, what are we going to accomplish in the first 90 days? What is the focus? How do we ensure all the employees are happy? How do we make a smooth transition, right? Like those were all the top concerns. And one of the first things we did is we had did some surveys, understood what do the employees want the most? What is the most important things to them? And for since we have like 300 employees, but like 250 of them or so are software developers. Well, the things that mattered the most to them are, of course, their pay, but it's also career growth, opportunity, training, mentoring, all those sort of things. And so that's been a big focus. Like, okay, for the first 90 days, we know historically the company has done some of these things, but there's a lot of room improvement for all of those things. So it's like, okay, how do we kick off initiatives to go do those things? So we're doing that. Like that, you know, that was one of the big initiatives. But outside of that, a lot of the focus was sales and marketing. It's like, how do we improve the sales and marketing of the team? And the first thing I did is hired a new head of sales. So we have a new chief sales officer who started literally like the first week of January. So he hit the ground running. Yeah. And I'd basically had him kind of hired, like knowing the transaction was going to happen, had kind of queued him up. So he was ready to go day one. And he has been a huge addition to the company, having a new head of sales. We've, you know, the company had hired some various different salespeople over the 6-year history. And we had another salesperson named Chris who's still with us, but never somebody that was quite at Greg's level. Like Greg brought 25 years of experience in IT staffing and stuff. And so he was a huge addition. And then the other part of it was just marketing. And so that has actually been my primary focus over the last 90 days is how do we improve and do marketing the way that I want to do it. Those are some of the major things like for the first 90 days. And I think we've made a ton of progress in all of them. And I think my biggest struggle was wanting to do all of those things as fast as possible, which I think kind of burnt me out, honestly. So for the first couple months,
I think people out around you as well.
Potentially. Right. Yeah. And so now I'm in a little more of the mode of we've seen a lot of great success. Like, the business has grown nearly 10% over the last 90 days. So it's like, hey, things are going the right way. Things are going the right direction. We've got a good sales pipeline. Like, you know, business is good. It's like, need to slow down a little bit. Like, let things, you know, continue to permeate and make progress. But I have to slow down a little bit. Like you said, it's like, have the 90-day plan. We've kind of executed the 90-day plan. We want to slow down just a little bit.
Right. And kind of just get your operational feet underneath you and all that stuff. Get it like here, what's the new normal and how do we build that? Right.
Yeah. And while continuing to make progress, like continue to think strategically about, okay, what does Q2 look like, you know, and what are the next goals, but try not to kill myself along the way either or anyone else.
What is your ideal client look like? Because I think about, you know, what you're offering, and I'm not in this world at all, but I can imagine you're basically saying, hey, we can hire software developers more easily, more cheaply, they'll be better, more efficient, all those things than you can. So what's the, like, what's the ideal customer? I mean, is it someone who needs one or two software developers? Is it someone who needs 10? Like, what does that look like?
Well, that's always part of the struggle, right? Is who is your ideal customer? And we have a, it's a little, it varies, but it's basically anybody that needs to hire software developers, which is kind of too broad. But usually it's kind of startups or growth stage companies, but it can be larger enterprise or mid-market companies that are just looking to hire software developers. And I think over time, we probably want to shift our focus a little bit to be, you know, we've always kind of avoided like early stage startups that are like pre-revenue because A, they can't afford anything, and B, there's a high chance that they're going to can't, you know, churn or cancel, right? So our focus is really startups that are have either raised a reasonable amount of money or they have revenue and they're growing, and we're trying to help them grow. Ultimately, that's what we're trying to do, is help them scale. We're trying to help them scale up their team and grow. But we've always tried to avoid the like super early stage startups. We do a little bit of that, but we try to avoid those because there's so much more risk in them, you know, failing. So
So what other risks do you see for full scale going forward?
You know, there's always weird risk with AI, and things that are going on with AI is interesting. How is that going to impact our industry? And honestly, it might have been one of the reasons my business partner wanted to sell. He's like, there's all this weird stuff going on and AI, and is there going to be a war in Taiwan? And like, you know, all this weird stuff. He's like, I'm just out of here, whatever. I don't have to deal with any of that. So, you know, we inherit that weird stuff of like, what happens if China and the US go to war in Taiwan, and how would that affect the Philippines? Because the Philippines would be dragged right into the middle of all of it. There's always like weird stuff like that, right? But AI is probably the biggest one. It's like, how is AI going to affect software development going forward? And so far, I would say it's increased the need of software development in a lot of ways. Because companies want to leverage AI. They're like, how do we use AI to do this stuff? And we've needed more developers to use AI to do this stuff. We haven't seen quite yet a round of like, well, I need fewer developers because we're using AI. But that could happen. I think as AI continues to develop, we may see that, and that could be a risk going forward. And of course, I always can. One of the bigger issues I have that's a risk is, you know, in the Philippines, when you hire somebody, it's not as easy to be like, oh, we don't need you anymore. We're terminating employment, right? It's there are labor laws that are more friendly to the employees. And so that's always one of the risks that we're trying to figure out. How do we balance of like, well, what happens if like half of our customers cancel next month? Like what
right. So your employees are cheaper, but since you have a longer commitment to them, that could come back and interesting.
Yeah. So that's always trying to balance, like that's kind of worst case scenario, right? But you talk about risk. It's like, well, how do we think about that risk of, you know, so like during COVID, we lost like 20 or 30% of our customers in like a 3 to 6 month period, right after COVID. Now we got revenue wise, I would say like 12 months later, we got back to where we were like before COVID, but that was like a weird 12 months, right? So it's like, you're talking about a risk perspective. It's like, well, what happens if we went through something like that again? You know, always thinking about like the risk, right? Like trying to weigh that. And one of the challenges of that I mentioned is, you know, our employees there, if we want to terminate people, is a different, you have to give them separation pay. You have to go through a more of a challenge. It's not like in the US where like, at least in most places in the United States, where you could terminate somebody kind of at will, right? So it's different.
Well, and there's also, you know, kind of the independent contractor model as well, that depending on what you're trying to give to someone can work sometimes, doesn't always work perfectly. Yeah, that's interesting. What do you think, like how much of your headspace is taken up by, you know, there's obviously a lot of variables, a lot of things you can't really control. I don't think you have any direct control over U.S.-China relations, for example.
Nope. Nothing I can do there.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean,
I think the number Greg likes to say this, our head of sales, Greg. He always talks about, like, you have to control the controllables.
Right.
Right. And so for us, it's just focusing on growth. And, you know, we think about the risk, you try and understand the risk, you do some worst case scenario planning, weird US China relationships, whatever, but control the controllables. And for us, it's about growth. Like, one of the struggles the company had over the last year, at some point in time, we had really grew and we hit kind of record revenue, record sales, and everybody kind of took their foot off the accelerator. Well, the problem is, then if you have some customers cancel for whatever reason, it's like, well, we didn't have the sales pipeline to kind of sell through that, right? Like, we didn't have other customers that could come in and take those employees and keep going. Where now we're in a much better state there. So sometimes in a business like ours, it feels like you're on a treadmill. And like, mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm sure your business, you have the same thing, right? Oh, I have, you know, a portfolio of all these customers, and then like three of them cancels. I got to find three more people to backfill those three, right? So you feel like you're on a treadmill, right? And Full Scale is that way. Sometimes we just feel like we're on the treadmill. It's like X amount of people cancel every month, and you got to sell X to backfill that. And hopefully you sell a couple more and you continue to grow. And that's the focus right now, is just how do we ensure that from a sales and marketing perspective, we're doing really good, and that side of it is really healthy to ensure, like, whatever weird stuff that happens, we can overcome it and we just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, and in my business, you know, sometimes there's a, hey, I'm at full capacity right now, but I have someone who's finishing a year-long agreement with me or something, and that's in, you know, May. So how about we start in May? And most of the time it'll be like, yeah, we can do that. But I would think in your business, things might be a little more time sensitive, and it might be a little more dicey to say, hey, we got a 6-month waiting list. Are you good with that?
Yeah, that's not going to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for us, it's usually about the talent, right? Like, if we have a super amazing, you know, .NET developer or JavaScript developer or whatever, odds are we can usually place that person really fast. And, you know, if we have, let's say we have 10, 20, 30, 40 potential clients that we've kind of talked to them, but they're not ready to make a decision. They're kind of on the fence or whatever. Usually it's that, like, hey, this super awesome developer is available today. Somebody is going to take them. So either you've got to step up and decide you're ready to go and take this person, or somebody else will, right? And the thing is, you've got to have enough pipeline of like interested customers that are ready to jump on the opportunity when it comes along.
Yeah. So there is, I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn. Matt, there's a Jungian therapist named James Hollis who he wrote this book about kind of midlife and like the struggles that we all find at midlife around meaning and purpose and these things. And he basically said the human condition is toggling between boredom/depression and anxiety/worry. Like if you don't push yourself enough, you fall into depression and you just feel stale. If you push yourself too much, you get overwhelmed and anxious and, you know, all of these. So which way do you lean?
You know, as an entrepreneur, it changes every day, right? It oscillates back and forth a little bit, right? Like, no doubt with you, like, you're like, man, I'm at capacity. Am I burning myself out, or am I just the right letter of capacity, right? And then you're like, customer cancels, and I'm like, oh crap, now what do I do? Like, it's like the never ending ebb and flow of that. But you're 100% right. It's like, after I sold my first company, people asked what it was like, and I told them it kind of felt like getting off of the roller coaster. It's like, it was fun, it was exciting, but it's like, now I'm off the roller coaster. Yeah, I got the big exit, but the excitement's gone.
I kind of, like, missed the roller coaster. Yeah.
It was the roller coaster. It was the fun part, right? So, but as I described earlier, the last 90 days were very stressful. Like you said, it's trying to find the balance. Where is the balance between boredom and letting the company kind of just meander around where it's on autopilot and we're not trying to improve, we're not trying to innovate, we're not trying to grow, versus being, you know, and I can be guilty of this, of being Veruca Salt and being like, I want it all and I want it now. Right. Like, where is the balance in between there? And I think you're absolutely right. And as an entrepreneur who has started 4 different companies and had a couple different exits, I have been all over that spectrum throughout my career. Mm-hmm. You're at 100%.
Well, and I would think entrepreneurs tend to lean toward the stressful side of things. They tend to want to like push the boundaries a little bit, because otherwise, you know, we'd all just be accountants, right?
And my wife will remind me every day of like, why are you doing that? Why? Yeah. Like, yeah. Why isn't your family more important? Why you're like, do we need more money? Why, you know, at what point in time is enough is enough? Like, why are you doing this? You know,
when you look back, that question, that's a really tough one.
It is really tough. And I enjoy what I do. I enjoy working. I enjoy what I do. And honestly, if you told me that I need to get on the floor and play G.I. Joes with my kids or go work, I would probably choose work. And that doesn't mean I don't enjoy my kids, but there's certain activities I enjoy doing with my kids. And then there's certain other activities I don't really enjoy. So that is hard. It's hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as you think going forward, you know, you're 90 days in, and you think about, you know, 1 year out, 2 years out, 5 years out, what do you see? Like, what kind of edges do you think you're going to be riding in terms of where you want to push the company and also where you want to push yourself as a leader? Like my coach, the guy who certified me as a coach, he used to call it, you know, your growth edge. Like, where is your growth edge as a leader?
Well, so we set our goal this year was to hire 20 new people a quarter. So that would be hiring 80 employees over the next year. That's somewhere around 30%-ish kind of growth for us.
Yeah.
Which feels like a healthy number at the stage we're in. And for the Q1 this year, man, I think we're at about that pace. Like, we're at a pretty good pace. So you talk about the growth edge, like that's kind of the growth number we're looking for that seems reasonable, seems sustainable. We don't have to kill ourselves to accomplish it. We don't have to take on an, you know, crazy amount of risk to do it. We, you know, we don't need to go find new investors to do it. We don't have to bet the farm to do it. Like, you know, it's just attainable. It's an attainable goal. And I think that's a great way to look at it. It's like, what is the growth edge that's something we can attain that won't kill us, that will be fun along the way too, right? And I think that's the edge that we're looking for, is what is sustainable, that, you know, we don't want this to be like a boring lifestyle business, but we want to be on that growth edge. I think that's a great way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then for your clients, like, how do you help them hit that for themselves? Like, how do they know if they're listening other than, oh, we need a, but you know, you talked a little bit about the stage of the business. Is there a particular type of industry you focus in? Is there a particular type of vision you like to support? Like, you know, someone listening to this podcast, how do they know, yeah, I should have a conversation with Matt?
Well, we help all kinds of tech companies, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of startups, scale up kind of companies. And happy to support any of them in whatever they do, whatever industry they do. So, you know, we don't really judge. It's like whatever they want to do, it's fine. We're open to anything.
What's got you most excited about this new role for yourself?
You know, it's a new challenge. It's fun. Wow. It's exciting. I love talking to other entrepreneurs. I love doing thought leadership and marketing and stuff. And so it's enabled me to focus on that. I really enjoy that part of the job. It's been kind of stressful for the last 90 days trying to get all of that going in the right direction, because that has been the focus. And in we haven't made as much progress as I wanted to. So it's like, for example, I wanted to redo our website and build a bunch of new content and do all these things, and we haven't made a lot of progress on that. So that's been frustrating. We have done a lot of rebranding and improvements to different things. So that's good. So it's like, we're making progress, but you know, that's where I've decided it's like I need more help. You know, we hired a marketing agency to help and having them help do different things. So, you know, some of it is just trying to just make some goals and be on the edge of, you know, what's attainable and not trying to overstress myself about it too, right? It's like, are we making progress? Are we going the right direction? And just trying to be a little more patient, which is not in my DNA.
Okay. So that may be the long term. Like what's the sustainable rate where your patience isn't stretched too much, but you feel like you're also kind of making progress?
Well, and it's the balance of like, okay, worst case scenario, the company is growing and we're making money.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, hey, yeah, we didn't get the new website launch, but you know what? We also had one of the best quarters in the company, you know, in company history, and we're making money. It's like, okay, worst case scenario is really good. Right. Yeah. So it's just trying to remind myself of that too.
Yeah. You're reminding me of another book. There's a, so I'm a big, Dan Sullivan fan. I don't know if you know his work. He runs an operation called Strategic Coach. He helps businesses grow. His most recent book is called 10X is Easier Than 2X, which is really like a compilation of his thinking. It's awesome.
Yes.
But within that, he's got this concept called the gap versus the gain. And, the gap is like, we're always evaluating ourselves based on some idealized future that never gets here. And so we're always feeling kind of bad about it. Like, oh, we should have done this faster. We should have, you know, we could have done this. We could have done this. But then you looked back on the gain. It's like, well, wait, we're having a record. We're having a record-breaking quarter. We have a successful business. And like, if you want to be happy as an entrepreneur, you should be focused. I mean, by all means, look at the gap, go in that direction, but don't beat yourself up about that, because that's never going to get here.
Right.
Look at the gain and see how far you've come. And for most people, it's amazing how far we come in a relatively short period of time.
No, and I love that way of looking at it. It's, you know, at the start of the 90 days, the only thing you could see is the gap, right? Like 90 days ago, the only thing there was a gap. And so now a couple months into this, it's like, now we can see, okay, hiring our new head of sales was clearly a great decision. Some of the other changes we've done have clearly worked, and like, look at the gain, right? So now you're 100% right. Like I love that way of thinking about it. And I definitely love the idea of the, like the 2X versus the 10X thinking, right? And that's why like I hired Greg to be the head of sales. It's like, this is like 10X thinking. Like I'm not trying to just coach Chris or other salesperson myself and figure out, okay, how do we make a few little tweaks and do this and do that? Like, it's like, if we're going to, you know, think about this big and do things the right way, no, we need to go hire Greg.
Right.
You know, and I always laugh. I'm like, at some point in time, you're like, I just want to hire Patrick Mahomes. Like, we want to go win this thing, right?
Yeah.
Right? Where is Patrick Mahomes? And for me, that was Greg. It's like, we need Greg. Where's Greg? I need Greg. And that's kind of where I'm at now in the marketing too. It's like, you know, if we're going to win this thing, we need, where's our Greg, you know, where is our Greg or our Patrick Mahomes for the marketing side of this? And so that's why I have worked with a marketing agency, and they've been very helpful, and trying to lean on them for the same reasons. Cause I'm not trying to figure this out myself. Like I want expert help. Where's the expert help to take this to the next level?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, when I think about my clients, you know, some of them are running $20 million companies on up to like $200 million companies. And one of the things that's challenging for people is you're not hiring for the company you are, you're hiring for the company you want to be. So if you're a $20 million company, hire a $50 million CFO, not a $20 million CFO. And most companies are like, you're always lagging a little bit. You hired your person when you were a $10 million company, and now the company has outgrown their capacity. And when do you swap out the team? When do you, you know, kind of bench the quarterback and go after Patrick Mahomes, right?
And those are hard decisions. They're really hard decisions, right?
Yeah.
And you know, when I came into this 90 days ago, that was the first thing I had to do. It was like, hey, we're going to give everybody a fair shot. You know, however you got here, you got here. You work at the company. If I decided to hire you, or I had nothing to do with it, right? Of the 300 employees we have, right? Most of these people, I didn't know them. Right. It's trying to get everybody had their fair chance. But now it's like, okay, we slowly have to make some of those moves of like, okay, we clearly have a huge gap here to your point of like, this person is not the person to help us get to that level. And having to make some of those moves, and we've had to make some of those moves already. And but yeah, that's the game, right? And that's the challenge, because you hate to, those are hard decisions to make. You hate making those decisions, but they're decisions you have to make. At some point in time, it's like, where is Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah. Well, and you're going to have to refresh me on my Chiefs history. Was it Alex Smith who was Patrick Mahomes' predecessor? Who was the immediate? Yeah. And so perfectly decent quarterback, not awful by any means. And when do you take the risk? It's like, oh, we got this rookie who we really like. We're going to bench Alex Smith or get rid of him. I don't remember what happened, if they dealt him or whatever, but that's always a really tough call.
Yeah, and I think it was, I want to say the Chiefs made it to the playoffs and Mahomes got to play the last game of the year because they could sit, you know, our quarterback. And of course, everybody watches Patrick Mahomes play that last game of the year and they're like, whoa, we need that guy next year. And so that was the end of it. And then next year, Patrick Mahomes is like MVP of the, you know, the league. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a great frame to end this on, that challenge of being a growing business. And because you're in the same situation that a lot of your clients are in a lot of ways, right? You're growing together. You're helping them upscale their talent.
Yeah.
In the process, they're helping you upscale your business and your capacity to serve other business owners. So it's really win-win.
I think the key there is that no matter what stage you're at in your business, you always have these challenges, right? You're always like, hey, we need this key hire. This thing has become a bigger pain point. Now we need this key hire, and it never ends. And part of it, as you said, it's like whoever might've been the key hire 4 years ago, now 4 years later might be like, hey, we have to hire somebody to manage that person because we're just a whole different level. Like, it just never ends.
Exactly.
The challenges continue to change. And so it's, I like what you talked about earlier. It's the gap and the gain and keeping your eye on both of those. I really like that analogy as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for agreeing to this role reversal. I had a lot of fun. I hope it wasn't too painful for you.
And for those that are listening that want to learn more about what you do, you know, Jeff Munn, your website's jmunn.com. What else can you tell people about?
Yeah, I mean, you can send me an email, jeff@jmunn.com. I'm happy to hear about what's going on for people. I write a lot on LinkedIn. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. You've got a YouTube channel where I put out, you know, kind of short videos with thoughtful things about leadership for founders. And happy to connect. Thank you for that, Matt.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this today, and looking forward to continue to follow you and work with you.
All right. Sounds good, Matt. Take care.
Thanks, Jeff.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.